Doug, it's hard to believe that we've known each other for over 25 years. I think it's relevant that during this time we've so often exchanged roles as teacher and student, mentor and mentee. As a young tenure-track faculty in the dance department at UNCG, I remember taking your beginning modern technique class. I was trying so hard to keep my identity as a dancer, along with being a faculty member and mother of two young children. When I started working on my doctorate, though, the technique classes went. When you returned to UNCG for your MFA, I was in the official role of your instructor, although I remember always feeling like more of a colleague with you, always learning as much from you as I taught. The same was true when you returned again to UNCG in 1998 to pursue your PhD. The kind of collegial relationship we have developed over the years, responding to each other's work, always asking for the kind of rigorous critique necessary to get beyond our own blind spaces, has made it easier to do this collaboration. There is something so intimate about sharing drafts of writing, even more so in the exploratory phase where I'm still trying to figure out what I think. I have to feel safe with a colleague to do this kind of sharing, and I appreciate the safety I feel with you. I realized this time especially that my exploratory stages of writing were more therapeutic than scholarly. This may be because I've gotten even more personally reflective as I get closer to retirement, now less than 4 years away. In the process of looking back over my professional life, I have reread work I wrote fresh out of my doctoral program, completed in 1984. In particular, I re-examined a 1985 piece that was published in the Journal of Curriculum Theorizing, titled Curriculum and the Morality of Aesthetics. I call it my $1,000 paper because I won the James MacDonald Award for it. Words I wrote then remind me of how I have failed to live up to all of my hopes and values. Quoting myself in that paper, "As an arts educator, I can find my work personally and morally valid only if experiences in creating, performing, and viewing art bring the student into conscious engagement with the world, to increased understanding of self and relation with others as subject with subject." In more recent reflective writing, I have wondered to what degree the hopes cultivated by my doctoral program in cultural studies, hopes for creating a world that is more just, more fair, as well as one that is more compassionate, are simply remnants of a more romantic age when we thought we could change the world by singing Kumbaya. It is so easy to become cynical and assume we need to get on with living in today's world, demanding standards and outcomes-based assessment of everything we teach. But somehow, I hope that the impetus toward multiculturalism and inclusion in education might be a way not just to close the achievement gap between those who earn low scores on standardized tests and those who earn higher ones. Perhaps it holds within it the possibility to continue recreating the world to one that gets us closer to the justice and compassion that may never be fully realized, at least not in our lifetimes. Doug, you completed the same doctoral program almost 20 years after I did. I think you seem less despairing and more hopeful, reminding me of a better part of myself. How did you get there?
First, I believe the trust and the supportive critique I feel in this particular collaboration with you is very similar to what I experienced when I first met you in 1985. As our professional careers have intersected repeatedly since then, I now only feel more of the same. Just as your children and mine have grown and matured into adulthood, so has our professional relationship. Completing the same doctoral program at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro, some 20 years apart, we both benefit from the tradition of questioning and skepticism in that program, and have brought this critical perspective to dance education. But to answer your question, We may have drawn somewhat different conclusions or better inspirations from our doctoral faculty mentors. David Purple, for example, was far more concerned about falling into despair and contributing further to the hopelessness of the world in his years close to retirement than when you were his doctoral student in the early 1980s. While his outrage at our educational system continued to grow, he also seemed to have realized more clearly the value and energy of hope in his writing and teaching. When I was in the final weeks of writing my dissertation in 2001, I remember vividly one of my last meetings with Dr. Purple on a warm, sunny February spring morning. Spring comes early in North Carolina. As his phase-out retirement ran its course, he increasingly preferred that I meet him at his College Park home, just a block from campus. Although I lived more than a mile away, I had found from experience that walking, rather than driving, to and from these meetings allowed me to prepare on the walk there and then time to digest afterward. Even 30 minutes with Dr. Purple's penetrating questions could seem like an entire afternoon. As I make my way up the long and winding front steps of his College Park home, Dr. Purple greets me at the door, and we move immediately to the light-filled expanse of the living room. As I settle into a large, well-worn leather club chair and unpack my satchel of drafts, notes, and with pen and highlighter in both hands, he tells me that we'll not need any of what I've brought, and instead he asks, better, tells me to come and sit with him on the sofa. He says, we're just going to talk. In very plain but forceful words that I've never forgotten, he said, Doug, if you want to spend all of your time tearing things down and deconstructing every possible angle, you must at some point paint the walls some color. Where's the hope? Where's the possibility? I've internalized his critique intellectually and viscerally since then, and I still hear the passion of his invocation that I write with a sense of hope in my voice each and every time I write. While like you, Sue, I still fret, agonize, struggle, and often become disillusioned. I know that my voice must be one that is critical, but also compelling and prophetic, reminding readers of what might be, to help people consider how we can actually make a better world. This is the legacy I've learned from Dr. Purple, from you, and I think is the basis for this current collaboration with you.